What up, everybody? It's Double G for the Fight Game podcast. John LaRocca and I here on a one-day delay. I apologize. I just got back from Southern California with the family, my wife, and my stepkids. They all had the same spring break date, so we headed out to Disneyland and California Adventure. And John, I'm telling you, you need to go, and your kids are small, so that, you know, maybe in a couple years,
yeah,
as a Star Wars diehard that you are, you will have a blast in the Galaxy's Edge area at Star Wars.
I can't wait. I'm looking forward to that. I'll probably, the kids will turn around, be embarrassed because dad's crying. Tears just coming down my face, you know, when I see everything, you know, I want to, you know, get pictures of stormtroopers, try to fight Kylo Ren, you know, and meet Rey, and you know, all that kind of stuff.
So the two main new rides of that Galaxy's Edge area, one is the Rise of the Resistance, which is like it's really, really cool little thing. I think, you know, a lot of people think that that's like the best thing right now. You know, when I, last time I was at Disneyland, the best thing was Indiana Jones. So a lot of it is also recency bias. But then we were only at Disney for one day. So like late in the, before we left, I decided to, I needed to find the Han Solo Smuggler's Run ride. And that was like a virtual video game kind of thing. But the thing was, you went in a group, like you needed, I think, five people minimum. And I was a straggler, so I had to join a foursome. And I was like the you know, just the straggler. And but that thing was pretty fun too. So yeah, as a Star Wars fan, you know, I didn't buy any merch though. I didn't see any shirts that I liked. I didn't see any, like, I did get a mug. I did get a nice coffee mug, made of Force Be With You coffee mug. So, but overall, yeah, I can't wait for you for when the kids get a little older, because, you know, the Disneyland is hard because there's so much excitement for the kids and it's like overload. And then there's that like energy drop that hits them, like, you know, 2 or 3 hours in. And then it's a little harder for them because, you know, there's so much, so much excitement and everything, and then they hit a wall at some point. But yeah, a few years, I think you guys will be good.
You know, I'll tell my son Hunter that you know, he's just loves his toys, his action figures, all that kind of stuff. I was telling him, like, you know, Daddy has a bunch of Star Wars action figures in the garage. Our garage is still packed, and
yeah,
we got to go through it from the move a few years ago. It's just a lot of work. And I said, you know, you have a lot more stuff, and when I finally get to it, and he's like, "Oh, that's so great!" And he's like, "Dad, you can have my old ones." I'm like, well, "Why are you gonna give me your old ones for?" He's like, "Because I know you love Star Wars." I'm like, "Oh, that's cool."
All right, let's talk some wrestling stuff, and you know, we're gonna get right into our thumbs up, thumbs down, because I think that's gonna lead into further conversation. No sound effects this week because we're recording it a little bit differently, but the sound effects will come back next week. So no Keela Cash doing the thumbs up, thumbs down song there. So let's just start it out.
Well, there will be some sound effects. I do have my windows open right now because for some reason, after this, all this cold we've been having, now I got a little warm weather coming through.
Oh, I know.
It's like, holy cow, let's open the windows around here now, yeah. You know? So it's pretty nice though.
All right. I'm going to start with my thumbs up. And, you know, the idea of our thumbs up is to sort of give propers to, you know, things that are going well. And some of it is a business sense of it too. Cause I think to some folks, my thumbs up, people are not going to be happy with this person returning, but like this person who I'm going to mention, I think people probably figured it out. This person has their boss, like, just ready to go and create brand new shows for them and everything. That person is CM Punk, the lead story of today's Wrestling Observer. And I'm going to read Dave's first two paragraphs. As things stand right now, the return of CM Punk is scheduled for a 6:17 show at the United Center in Chicago, which, being a Saturday night show, is likely the debut of the new weekly show. The rumor of the new show name is AEW Collision, based on a trademark the company took out some time back when the talks with WBD for the new Saturday show got serious. So, Andrew Zarian, my co-host on We're Live Pal, he's been on top of this story, so I've got to hear it from his side. I've got to hear it from Dave's side. And really, the way that I see this is, you know, obviously I have not had this conversation with Tony Khan, so I can't say for sure, so I'm going to be a little bit general. Mm-hmm. But when you are in the midst of trying to get a renewal on your TV rights deal, and hopefully, and I think we all believe, it's going to be more money than the last time, you want to make sure that, you know, you have a lot of your ducks in a row. And if Warner Brothers Discovery sees CM Punk as a star, and they saw what you did with CM Punk last time, I mean, like Rampage was like the most important show for forever because CM Punk showed up on it one time. And now you have the opportunity to bring him back. Now, I'm sure there's still some frustration in the locker room. There's still some sense of maybe distrust with the management because of the idea that CM Punk is now coming back. But CM Punk is in a really great spot for the health of the wrestling business and for AEW. I hope he uses this in a positive way. You know, make yourself some money, but also use your leverage to do some good stuff on this new Saturday show. He just has, like, they're rolling out the red carpet for the guy. And I know a lot of people are kind of frustrated about that, but this has always been the wrestling business, right? This is, you know, Scott Hall says he has a lot of friends, but, you know, he's enough friends. He doesn't have enough money. Like, that's how this business historically has worked. So I just think, you know, the guy, he did what he did in the presser after the show. He was a big baby about things, really frustrated, took it out on the wrong people more than likely, and created this scenario. Now, it is really up to Tony Khan to take the real story of what happened and shape it somewhat into a storyline and into business. Because, like I said, this is a business first and foremost. But CM Punk is, he's got to be feeling good. Like, they moved mountains to make sure that he could come back. And this Saturday show is really, I mean, might as well just call it Punk and Friends, right? Like, that's kind of what it's going to be. So my thumbs up is for CM Punk. The guy is the talk of the industry again. And I know a lot of people won't like for those reasons, but you got to give him credit. Like, he made himself the main story again. And you don't often get to do that two times in, 2 years or 2021, right? So
yeah,
CM Punk is my thumbs up.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to him coming back. Like I said, it's been greatly missed when it comes to the AEW television show storylines. I think I've suffered, and I think his stuff is usually the best stuff. Like I said before, his program with the MJF was probably my favorite program in a very long time, and probably the best wrestling program, you know, since probably the Bloodline, right? Bloodline kind of came after that, so yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think Warner Bros. Media obviously realized that, hey, he was your biggest star. He's not here. We need him back, you know? And then, of course, I'm sure discussions happen. How can we do it and all this stuff? And, hey, in a great way for Tony, they're creating a whole new show, more money. And, I definitely think when it comes to rights fees, they're definitely going to get a raise. There's no doubt about that. And we'll see what happens with, does Rampage stick around? Mm-hmm. We're kind of hoping maybe Rampage becomes ROH because it'll be something different, you know. But we'll see. Big thumbs for CM Punk. And this is like the biggest story I'm really curious to see come into 2023, because I really want to see how this now it used to be a soft brand split. Now people are saying hard brand split, right? So I want to see what this is going to be all about. How that television show is going to look and feel compared to Wednesday nights.
All right, who is your thumbs up?
My thumbs up is a good friend of ours, Mary Freeze.
Oh, wow.
She was just on Shut Up and Wrestle with Brian Solomon podcast, talking about her dad, Pompero Firpo. And I want to shout out her in that podcast, and I want to encourage everyone to go check it out. It was awesome. I really enjoyed listening to her talk about her dad, and it's like, you know, we've heard her talk about her dad to us,
mm-hmm.
and just hearing the stories, and there's a lot of fun stories, and just her love for her dad, and like I'm listening, I'm like getting tears of joy, like, you know, like listening to it, because you know you just feel that love, and it's amazing to listen. And a lot of people don't know who Pompero Firpo is, and you want to, you know, you're interested in pro wrestling history. He's one of the wildest wrestlers in wrestling history, a very influential wrestler. Of course, a lot of people, Randy Savage promos style came from him. He's a legend all over. And so it was really good. I hope you get a chance to listen to it as well. And Brian Solomon only has a really good podcast, because he usually gets a lot of people, a lot of unique people on the show, from like WWE creative, mm-hmm. From like, you know, costume designer to art designers, and you know, people from the magazine world and stuff like that. So it's a really solid podcast. So I wanted to give a shout out to our friend Mary Freeze and Brian Solomon as well for that, for Shut Up and Wrestle podcast. It's really good.
So Mary Freeze, I've mentioned this story before when her dad passed. Dave just says, hey, do you want to go to Pompero Firpo's funeral? And I was like, his funeral? Like, he's local? And he's like, yep. And I'm sure he got an invite. Somehow he got an invite. But we just showed up, and I thought it was really nice. And then obviously meeting Mary there, and just what a great hostess in a day that is kind of hard to be that open and to be that like welcoming. She was awesome. And then lo and behold, right during the pandemic, or coming out of the pandemic, she is a teacher for both of my stepsons. And so, you know, she's texting, you know, my wife about, you know, the boys. And then I was telling my wife, I was like, oh yeah, you know, this woman who comes over to Dave's every once in a while to watch wrestling, she's a teacher at the school that the twins go to. And she said that, you know, she was possibly going to be their teacher. And so I'm talking to her, and then I'm talking to my wife, and neither of them believe that she is actually the twins' teacher, because everyone's wearing masks back then. And so finally, I had to kind of put it all together, and I go, oh yeah, she is their teacher. This is who this person you've been texting this whole time is the person who has come to Dave's and watch stuff. So yeah, she's so cool. And you know, Dave and I had her on the Wrestling Observer Radio, mm-hmm. and you know, she, the thing that came out of that show that I thought was really cool is she had like this really cool like text friendship with Lanny Poffo, because her dad was very inspirational and towards Randy, the kind of the style of promo that he did. So she had this interesting like, and then Lanny passed away, and so then she came on with Dave and I to talk about Lanny. So that was I don't know if that was her podcast debut or not, but it sounds like we have a new podcast guest star in the making. Maybe we'll see Mary on a bunch of other shows now.
Yeah, well, I know she's been on, I think she's been on the 605, I believe she mentioned it before. But yeah, I know. She was like, oh, I missed you at WrestleMania. And I was like, oh, yeah, you know, we got so much family stuff. And, you know, but when we all get together, it'd be fun to hang out again. And
oh, yeah, maybe at Backlash.
Or Cons.
What? Oh.
That was that Korean spot you found or something.
Like, oh, yeah. It's the Korean barbecue place that I took a picture of. All right, so let's talk about the thumbs down, and this is Dynamite related, so I will give the small reason, but we'll dovetail it into the bigger conversation when we talk about our big picture on AEW Dynamite. Sadly and unfortunately, I think it's got to be Jungle Boy for me. Now, it is not entirely his fault, because I do think the booking of this Four Pillars stuff is not booking the Jungle Boy to what he's good at. It is actually showing a lot of his weaknesses, unfortunately. There's been two opportunities for him to get out there and really showcase some promo skills. And I thought he's just looked bad, really bad both times, to the point where I was just like, man, like, why are we even doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, everything that he kind of gained from, you know, the feud from Christian and beating Christian and, you know, being the tough guy in that match, it's kind of lost now. And it's not only his fault, like the way this whole Pillars thing has been booked. It's like MJF and like the three Gossip Girls is kind of how they're doing it, right? And it's so unfortunate, because you have three individually talented wrestlers in Darby and Sammy and Jungle Boy, and the way that this whole angle is being booked is just like, who can bitch at each other the hardest about things that nobody even really understands, because it's all insider language stuff that happens in the locker room. And when Sammy busted out that the fans have created the glass ceiling for the wrestlers, I was just like, okay, someone just cut this dude's mic. Like, what is he even talking about? Now, that's not Jungle Boy. We'll get to that part. But yeah, so I think Jungle Boy has pretty much lost all the good stuff that he gained in that Christian feud. And he's the worst of the four pillars right now, I think.
I mean, it's part of Tony Khan's booking issues, his follow-ups, right? He something happens that gets over and works, and he doesn't understand how to follow up. He thought maybe doing this four pillar thing would be interesting, but it's not. And I'll just go right into my thumbs down is Tony Khan's booking. I was once again very frustrated with this episode of Dynamite. I mean, to a point where I didn't care about the main event. Like, it was hard for me to watch after like the first like few minutes of that match. It was just ugh. But the opening segment, particularly, really frustrated the hell out of me.
I think it's the worst. It is on par of the worst segments that they've ever done on television, and that is including that one Dark Order.
I think that might take the cake. I don't know. There's just a bunch. Yeah, but
that's probably their Shockmaster moment. To be fair. So,
but the point of the fact that when they all got out there, and yes, there's just a bunch of little kids gossiping at each other, like, you know, schoolyard trash talking stuff. But there was one guy of those three that was actually getting over really well. Darby Allin with those promos, and we're both shocked. Like, man, this is a Darby we've always wanted. You know, I'm glad this Darby's coming out. You know, he's had some bass in his voice, some attitude. And then for some damn reason, he goes out there and turns himself heel. He came off just as bad as Jungle Boy.
It was bad.
It was almost like, hey, you're almost getting too over. You know, we got to make you look like, you know, we got to make Jungle Boy the guy. And, you know, I was so frustrated. Like, listen, Darby's far ahead of Sammy and Jungle Boy, right? I'm glad they're doing this tournament thing. I hope it ends up with just Darby winning and it's a one-on-one match at the pay-per-view. But I still kind of feel with the finish of the main event that we somehow, some way, it's still going to end up being a four-way. But yeah, I just was really, and I just put me in a pissed off mood the rest of the show. And then of course it just kind of starts, I don't know, falling apart from there. And we'll talk more about that as we go along here.
I'm going to guess that I liked this show a lot more than you did, but some of it is I watched it in clumps. Like, I watched the main event segment, I think it was that evening or the next morning. And so I kind of got it all out. I was like, oh, that sucked. And then I stopped watching. And then I started watching again. And I kind of watched it in bits and pieces. But the one thing I want to say, I applaud Tony for trying to push a younger star. The problem is, and we've been on this since the beginning, you can't push all of them at one time. Yeah. Because you minimize them all at the same time rather than escalating one to the highest possible height. So you kind of like, you know, you sort of sabotage the peak of whoever's the one who's getting over by saying everybody is equal. And it really, you know, you remember the, what was that era that they call it? Ruthless Aggression. Remember that Ruthless Aggression era where yeah. Vince McMahon basically comes out and says, we don't have any stars right now. We need you guys to like go for the brass ring. And like, that was probably somewhat of a shoot in a sense. But this is Tony Khan doing the same thing with these young guys going like, okay, who's gonna come out on top here? And for a while it was Darby. And so if this tournament does not actually lead to Darby and Max, and it is still to get to that four-way, I mean, what a waste. But
yeah.
At the same time, you're putting these three guys into uncomfortable position, something that they're not good at. You know, the Paul Heyman quote about, you know, hide their weaknesses mm-hmm. and emphasize their strengths. Like, this is not Jungle Boy's best strength isn't taking a diss from one of the two guys and then squinting. Like, that's all he did.
Yeah.
Like, they said something mean about him and he squinted. And I was like, you know, what was the guidance? Like, hey, when he says something bad about you, like, maybe puff up your chest a little bit, or maybe get pissed off, or maybe slap the top rope. Not squint, because, like, that just showed, like, it was like, huh? What did he say? Huh? How dare him? Like, that's not the reaction that you want from an up-and-coming babyface. And then, like you said, Darby turns himself heel, because when MJF picks the name out of the hat, and it's Jungle Boy and Sammy.
Mm-hmm.
This fighting babyface does his Super Mario Brother sound effect and goes, woohoo! I was like, what is going on here?
I know. Like, he's in agreement with MJF, the guy he hates, right? Like, oh, thank you, bud, almost, right? Oh, I was just so upset. Jungle Boy is easy to book. I booked him, you know? Yeah. And all you do, especially after that match with Christian, is very simple. You probably don't have him on that Dynamite after because, wrestling-wise, because he just had this very brutal physical match. A really great match that I loved. But you can do this would be a perfect opportunity for a post-pay-per-view promo video of, you know, Jungle Boy talking about his win, right? And finally getting rid of the Christian Cage, the monkey off his back, right? He's accomplished that goal. Now he's focusing on moving up, winning matches. He's going to continue on, right? And then next week on Dynamite, after that, he wins a match. Again, maybe you have him the following week. He's in Wrestle Dynamite. Maybe he watches on Rampage, wins a match there. And you kind of just keep that. Everyone doesn't need a program. You know what I mean? You could just give guys wins on television. And it was just so frustrating to watch. And you know, like stuff that we've been tired for years. And granted, you know, everyone calls it the WWE trope because WWE was the player for so long by himself, really. And, you know, guy walks out for a promo. Music hits, here comes another. Music hits, here comes another. I'm just like, why are we doing this, right? Be different, right? So very frustrating. And then it just, like I said, it kept spiraling out of there. My boy Will Hobbs losing the belt for God knows why. And it's just, I was not a happy camper there, Garrett.
All right, let's go into the big picture because we kind of gave the beginning of Dynamite. And we can even go back a little bit because the way that they set this thing up is you had the three guys just bitching at each other about stuff that didn't even make sense. It was all work shoot stuff that we hate. No real, like, nothing that a fan could like sink their teeth into, right? Oh, yeah, you got signed because you were from SoCal. Like, what does a fan care about how Jungle Boy got signed? Mm-hmm. What does a fan care about it? Why Darby Allin started wrestling because he couldn't make it in skateboarding? Like, that's nothing a fan could sink their teeth into. The promo from 2 weeks ago where Darby talked about his parents and buying his mom a house and, you know, dad retired. That's something we could sink our teeth into. And they didn't do any of that on this show. But then, So after we hear all these three guys just complaining and complaining and complaining, MJF's music comes out. And I don't know if you heard this, but there was a babyface pop for that music. And then the fans were like, "Oh, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
We're not supposed to cheer him."
Well, they should. They were probably like, "God, this segment sucks. They were like, save it." And here he comes, MJF, to at least make it somewhat interesting.
Save the day, man. He was saving the day. Yeah. All three guys, they needed the gong or the hook or something. And they literally should have brought out MJF 5 minutes before he came out.
But MJF makes the match. He makes the path to get to him.
Because he's got Tony Khan wrapped around his finger. That's what he always says.
So
right?
Tony Khan's a heel or a bitch?
Hey, man.
That's where Tony Khan is presenting himself as on this television show when it comes to MJF.
That's the way that MJF has always explained it. So they create this tournament, and it comes out that Sammy has to wrestle Jungle Boy, and then the winner goes to face Darby. That winner goes to face MJF at the pay-per-view. Now, Sammy and MJF are in cahoots because Sammy's being interviewed. MJF interrupts it, and he's trying to charm the pants off of Sammy. And he basically tells Sammy that he's going to help Sammy get to the pay-per-view. But Sammy's got to lie down for him. He's got to do the Jeff Jarrett against Hulk Hogan. He's going to go on his shoulders, get pinned, and it's going to be, that's it for the pay-per-view. Great way to sell that match, by the way.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to make sense of this, and I'm not sure you can make sense of it, because we have always been led to believe in professional wrestling that by being the champion, that is how you get all of the money. So what is happening here is MJF is so rich that he can write a check so that Sammy can basically team up with him to beat these other two guys. Mm-hmm. And then when push comes to shove, MJF's going to give him enough money to where Sammy bails and does not need this championship. I think that's what the story is supposed to be.
You're better at this than me, man. I was like, what is going on? Why would Sammy do this? After weeks and weeks of saying how much he wants the championship, how he wants to be the guy. He doesn't want to be known as, what do you say, Chris Jericho's bump guy, whatever. And now he's like, oh, sure. I'll take the money and lose. Like, so whatever makes no sense.
I wonder what the check was, because I'm almost sure that the number Sammy wrote down was like way smaller than it probably was.
Yeah.
So they do that interview and they hug. And Sammy is trying to, I think the idea is that he's getting one over on MJF. He's going to take this dude's money and then he's going to screw him. Like, that's the way that he thinks about it. Mm-hmm. So then we get to the main event, and it was Sammy and Jungle Boy. And it's just, you know, dangerous high spot after dangerous high spot.
It was an indie match right off the bat. These guys, their worst qualities of their in-ring ability just came out in this match, to a point where, like, within, like, I believe, like, 30 seconds, Sammy Guevara's on the apron, Jungle Boy's in the ring, and Jungle Boy just jumps and hits him with the Huracana, and Sammy takes a big bump to the floor. But so early on, why is Sammy just waiting there watching him run directly across the ring and let himself get caught in this Huracana? It just looks too stupid. To a point where, and also the break spot was a shooting star press, not shooting star press, excuse me, a Spanish fly off the apron to the floor for a break spot. Like, who's agenting this match? Who let these guys do this match? Oh, it's ridiculous.
So at the end, Jungle Boy takes a bump from the top rope all the way to the barricade, and I think he hits the corner of the table, so he's out.
Yeah.
And as he's trying to come to his feet, Sammy has the ref, and MJF knocks him out with the ring. And so Jungle Boy stays down, And so the referee had gotten to, I don't know, it was about 7 or 8 by the time that Sammy had interrupted the count. And then he looks down and Sammy's like, count, count, count. And he goes, oh, and he sees Jungle Boy still out. And he goes, okay, 9-10, match is over. And I know a lot of people didn't like that. And I mean, it's stupid. But it was either just have him count 9-10 or then he counts from 1 to 10 all over again. And for me, might as well have just called 9-10 right there so we could get it over with.
Yeah,
so now Jungle Boy is out. He loses by count out. So it is now Sammy Guevara and Darby Allin next week to go to winner takes on MJF at the pay-per-view.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the combination of MJF and Sammy Guevara together. I think they would make a great Tully Blanchard, Gino Hernandez kind of dynamic duo kind of deal. Because they both, you know, Sammy got that slap little face and you throw Ty Conti with him and, you know, almost like whatever that group was that MJF had and MLW with Richard Holiday and Hammerstone. You know, you kind of, I'm thinking about it now. Shit, instead of wasting our time with this damn Pillars deal, you could now start transitioning Sammy to go with MJF and make them. Because I always feel like MJF needs something around him, right? Someone. A bodyguard, like with Wardlow, maybe a new version of that, or something like that to kind of protect him, right? He just kind of comes out there and by himself. I feel like there's just a part of the package is missing. I think a little association with Sammy Guevara and having Ty Conti there. Oh, man, can you imagine the promos with those guys? Can you imagine MGF kind of flirting with Ty Conti without Sammy Guevara not knowing and all this kind of stuff? You could do some cool shit, but, like, I do like that. And maybe we'll transition to that, you know, after this. But I still think ultimately it's going to end up still being a four-way somehow, some way, just because of the count-out finish of the main event.
All right, so let's move on. And Britt Baker in Pittsburgh meant that the women's match, which was very early on the show, in the first hour, first actual match that we saw, Britt and Jamie Hayter against Ruby Soho and Toni Storm. And I thought it was a pretty good match. Now, I think the one thing that kind of holds it back from being a really good match is, you know, Britt is still not the smoothest and not the most athletic when it comes. Like, when she makes that hot tag, like, I was ready for, like, fire. And she was going through some steps. And
Britt's awkward as hell. She's not that good. She's over. I'm not going to take that anything away from her. But Dana Brooke looks like freaking Kurt Angle compared to Britt Baker out there.
You just want her to do cartwheels into the corner and backspring elbow into the corner. So okay, I think that's kind of harsh, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah,
because it's mostly because people think that she's, you know, really really good. And see, the thing that I like about this though is her personality and her character is way beyond her actual wrestling, and it's very similar to how Trish Stratus started wrestling, right? Trish Stratus's personality, her look, was way ahead of the wrestling. But then she worked hard enough to where the wrestling, it didn't quite catch up because Trish's look is like A++++. But it was like Trish became a pretty good wrestler in the mid-2000s. That's why I'm still in on Britt, because she's got the personality, she's got the character down, she's got the promos when, you know, when she has the time to make it a good one, and the wrestling will hopefully catch up. And I still think there's a lot of room for her to grow.
Well, I mean, Trish within a year and a half was pretty good. Britt's been on TV for like 4 years. It still sucks. So like I don't think she's ever gonna get any better. I think this is what we get with Britt Baker. I think she's a hell of a personality. I think she's a hell of a manager. I think she could be a version of a female valet, a female manager, like Sherry Martel, maybe with Adam Cole, if they ever go that way. But yeah, in ring, I just don't ever see her. I think she thinks in her mind that I could get this kind of sense that she thinks she's there. She's a star and I haven't seen any improvement.
Well, I mean, if I'm her, I would feel that I'm a star. I mean, she's the, you know, one of the main characters in the All Access show. They give her a lot of mic time, obviously. They want her to be that person. But, you know, I think she's probably honest with herself in that she knows that, you know, she's not Mercedes Moné. I was like, wait, it's not Sasha Banks. you know, and she's not at that level. She's not Asuka. But, you know, she doesn't have to get all the way to that level. Like, she could just be above average, and I think she'd still be good because she does have the personality and the charisma to kind of take it, you know, take it over what she actually is. So this match, it was for Britt to win, and they did a nice little thing. I thought Jamie Hayter did a really good job. She gets thrown into the steps, and then the camera kind of misses it where she gets kicked in the shoulder. All you hear is this, like, guttural scream. And for all I knew, I was like, oh, I wonder if she actually got hurt. But the reason why they take Jamie Hayter out, and after Britt wins, she doesn't even celebrate. She goes with Hayter, and they walk Hayter to the back for this injury, is because Britt's going to come out again at the end of this show, and Hayter is not going to be there to save her. So I thought that was good part of the storytelling.
Well, it would be even better if they would have followed up on that, showed her in the back with a doctor, showed her maybe being loaded up in an ambulance or something that's a rusher because her shoulder's separated or, you know, something like that. But they never followed up on
it. They definitely should have done that for
because
sure.
It looked awkward as hell when they tried to do their big heavy angle, you know, with Adam Cole, Jericho, and Britt Baker later in the show.
Yeah, we'll get there in a second. All right, so the Elite are in the ring, and Kenny Omega is like, I had this dream, and the only regret I have is this, you know, screwdriver. I wish I would have stabbed it in Moxley's face. And it's like, oh, it's a fire in Omega. All right, let's see where this goes. And then he goes, BCC, why don't you come out so we can squash the beef? I was like, what, squash the beef? You just wanted to murder this guy's face. Now, why don't you just say, let's come out, we need to fight? What does squash the beef mean?
Oh my God, I know. Ridiculous, right?
So immediately, Danielson comes out and kind of saves the day. He's like, you guys are all amateurs. And I'm like, yep, Omega's promo was kind of like that. And so what he's doing, though, is he's setting up the baby faces to get outsmarted. And the BCC attacks them from the back, and there's this giant brawl. Now, it wasn't your old-fashioned brawl. There was some diving into the fans.
Mm-hmm.
There was some Three Amigos suplexes, so not necessarily what you'd see in a fight.
Not necessarily guys that understand how to brawl. This is the example of that. Like, people have no clue. They think they know, but they don't know, and no one's even telling them what to do. And it's too long and going for too long with nobody trying to break them up. Remember, it's not a match. This is just a promo that turned into a fight.
The Bucks are supposed to be really angry that these guys put them in the hospital. So Danielson comes out, and it's like a 3-on-1 with Kenny, and they grab him, and he's trying to get out. He can't get out. They've got the clamps on him. By the way, if Claudio ever gets the clamps on anybody, I think they probably can't get out, because he picked up Nick Jackson from the ground like he was a child and just tossed him. I was like, whoa, this dude.
Claudio's face during all this showed me that I don't know if they really went through all the beats of this when they're talking about this, because he would take a shot and look around, like almost like no sell it. It's like, okay, what's coming up next? Oh, this guy's going to come up me, and now I'm going to backdrop him on a hurricanrana, you know, or something. It was like, ugh. There's freaking Matt Jackson doing Northern Lights suplexes, yeah, and on the floor. Just so stupid, man.
That stuff was really silly. But I don't know if this was intentional, because Daniel Bryan goes, you know what? These guys are all amateurs, except for you, Kenny. I think you have some potential, but you sit in the lobby of your own potential.
This Daniel Bryan heel turn, or what's the name? Bryan Danielson heel turn sucks, man. It's just so out of left field. It's just so out of left field to me. And I don't know how you feel about that, but we just, like I said, we just went from this emotional journey to win the title from the MJF, and he doesn't win, and he's...
They skipped a step, for sure. They 100% skipped a step.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we need to do a War Games match. So, Brian, you're going to turn heel now.
And you know what the other thing about it is? That, you know, we have the Jericho group, which is the sports entertainers, and then we have the BCC, which are the professional wrestlers. And so where does everyone else sit? You're supposed to be either a sports cosplay entertainer or a professional wrestler.
Cosplay wrestlers. The elite are the cosplay wrestlers.
Oh, my God. So he's pissed at Omega because he thinks Omega has a ton of potential and just will never reach it. And so he grabs a screwdriver. Kenny's like just out of his mind. He can't get out of the grips. And so Don Callis runs out with a chair. And he looks, and I think Danielson just kind of looks at him and laughs. And then Callis drops the chair, and then he runs back up the ramp. And then they're about to stab Omega with the screwdriver, and who comes out? None other than Takeshita to help Omega, and he cleans house. He takes everybody out. They double clothesline Moxley out of the ring. I think Moxley jumped a little early. He was probably afraid that they wouldn't hit him hard enough for him to go over, so he kind of helped. And that was it. And Omega and Takeshita, they grab Don's hand. Don raises their arms together, and Omega's still unsure about this. So this might be long-term storyline of Takeshita being Don's favorite over Kenny at some point.
Well, yeah, I think the original plan was Don was supposed to, be the manager of Takeshita, but Don's a heel, Takeshita's not, and who knows? You know, because we love the – Tony loves the taking advantage of people storyline. Like, you know, the Private Party guys were stuck in that for a long time. Yeah. Matt Hardy's been stuck in that for a long time. You know, so, yeah, here we go. But, yeah, I just – okay, so we had this brawl all over the place, and we open with the next match. Starts off with a brawl through the crowd as well, and then we're going to get into that. But I don't know, man. I'm not feeling this. I'm guessing that when it comes to whatever happens at Double or Nothing, even the arena, what do you call that match? Anarchy, yeah, the arena, is that what it's called? Or maybe War Games or Blood and Guts. I'm guessing one of the members of the elite group, probably one of the Jackson brothers, probably Matt, because they know he does have that tricep injury.
Mm-hmm.
Hangman Page will come in and join them in that one of those matches. If not, maybe the Bucks get through the first match at the pay-per-view and that Blood and Guts, that, you know, this is where the emotional cowboy comes and joins the elite again.
All right. Wardlow, Hobbs. Now, thank God for Arn Anderson.
Really?
Because, this angle was about Hobbs and his new goofball gang taking advantage and stealing and, you know, ruining Wardlow's stuff and then beating him for the title. And, you know, we're just like, okay, what happens to Wardlow here? But Arn Anderson told his story in 60 seconds, which was, brother, you better go get your championship back. Like, who gives a shit about all this other stuff? Like, you're so focused on the antics of QT Marshall, and that's why they're doing it. Go get the damn championship back, because that's what matters. That's what makes you a superstar. And so I was like, yeah, like, what, you know, thank God that Arn's there, because Wardlow was not cutting that promo. Wardlow was not going to give us a reason for him to beat Hobbs. Like, he's just not that kind of promo. So I'm glad that Arn is with him. It made it feel important. And then, so when he won, it didn't feel like, because I know he the giving the Hobbs the title only to take it away from him in this, like, hometown, but, you know, my hometown, your hometown thing, it's kind of silly. But the fact that Arn told that story, I was more okay with Wardlow getting the belt back than I was prior. Now, there was shenanigans in this match. Arn and QT had to do their thing. They have this long-standing feud. I know a lot of people probably didn't really care for that stuff, but I thought the match in of itself, when it came to two athletic big dudes like beating each other up, going into the crowd, coming into the ring, power bombs, like all that stuff is fun because, you know, I know that this wrestling company, AEW, it's not really about the big guys only. It's about, you know, all sizes, and you can have someone like Orange Cassidy, you know, punch Big Cass in the face, and, you know, Big Cass falls and he doesn't just go down to a knee. That's all that is fine, but I still love it when you have two big athletic dudes fight because I don't see that in my neighborhood. I don't see people who are 5'10", 175 pounds doing power walks in my neighborhood, who look like Orange Cassidy. I don't see Wardlow size guys and Hobbs size guys, you know, walking around my neighborhood. So I still love it. I still get a kick out of like great big men just having big athletic fights. That's why I like this match.
I thought it was kind of backwards. I thought the match probably should have started a little slower because they just had a brawl, or at least would have put this maybe somewhere else in the show. Maybe should have opened the show without that stupid segment with Darby and Jungle Boy and Sammy playing, you know, having a schoolyard spat out there. Tony Khan needs to stop having to book hometown heroes win all the time. Powerhouse Hobbs winning the title in the Bay Area because he's from the Bay Area. And that's great, right? But just to, you take it off him just because Wardlow's now in his hometown, or I guess that's what he said, right? He's from Pittsburgh or has a connection to Pittsburgh.
I think so.
So you just, wait, what was the point of will Powerhouse Hobbs win the championship? It was a nothing championship. He won in the Bay Area. He won it in a he got there in a really horrible ladder match. He wins the belt. He gets stuck. He gets stuck with, you know, the Geek Squad of you know, QT Marshall, Jabroni Miss Hancock, and, you know, Jabroni Aaron Solo, right? And then he does nothing. He just retains the belt on a Rampage, which is viewed by half their audience that watches Dynamite. So no one knows what he done on Rampage. Half the audience doesn't care, right? And like, he's just there doing nothing. And now you take the belt off him. I don't get this at all. At least you could have built it to at least the pay-per-view and have Wardlow win the belt there. I just feel so bad for Hobbs. I think, you know, he's a superstar potential, that guy. And now, welcome to dark. Enjoy Rampage. Like, maybe they're doing this because CM Punk wants Will Hobbs on his show. Maybe that's what maybe he's going to the TNT champion can't be on TBS defending his title, right? Maybe that's where he's going. I know Powerhouse Hobbs in interviews has been very complimentary of CM Punk and his teaching. So maybe that's why they did this. But man. It just, he won it. He's in the lineage of the TNT championship. But ultimately, it was forgettable.
So my thought on Hobbs is very similar to yours, obviously. I wanted him to have a good run. I wanted him to be the guy that, you know, Cody and such believed in when he first came in. The problem is, I think what we now realize is the whole idea was just to heat Wardlow back up and they used Hobbs to do it. But this is sort of Vince McMahon booking, if this is what eventually happens, which is you bring somebody up, you heat them up, you give them success, and then you see what they do with it. They may not be the long-term plan at that time, and then you move on to the next guy, and then you see if that wrestler still has the same, you know, ferocity to continue to do well. Now, I'm not saying this is like a mental game, but I think this is an opportunity for Hobbs to be like, hey, I get it, and I'm still going to be badass Will Hobbs and still going to do all those things. Now, you're right. If he doesn't get the TV time, then it's not really going to matter. But my hope is that he sees it as, okay, I kind of felt you know, what it was like, and now it's time to dial it back up and get back there and you know, continue to grow and continue to go up that ladder. Because, I mean, we've seen it these last 6 months. Like, the dude has it. The one thing he doesn't, the one thing you can say that he is not, like, a star at yet is the promo thing. But he also doesn't really have the opportunity to cut long promos. He did the Book of Hobbs stuff, which was, you know, a more of a video thing than an actual in-the-ring promo. So my hope is that they see him as, like, a guy who they're going to get into the mix for other stuff. And I think he did a really good job with his first opportunity.
Well, I'm hoping he gets put on the CM Punk show, and I think CM Punk will be able to, at least, I don't know who's, I'm sure Tony's booking that too, but I hope he kind of leaves the booking to CM Punk and, or someone else, just because, you know, Tony's booking everything else, freshen things up. I think if Powerhouse Hobbs does end up on that show, I'm confident at least CM Punk will know what to do with them. But Tony, I just feel, is going to end up just, you know, oh, we're done with that story. Now he's going to be put on the ice until we do something else with it. But you said this is a way to heat up Wardlow. Well, Tony, didn't Samoa Joe turn on Wardlow, cut his ponytail off, and then Wardlow had that sit down with Jim Ross talking about his hair and how, because his dad was sick and he grew it out for his dad, and Joe knew about that, and that's why he cut it, you know. So Wardlow beats Joe, wins the belt, and then continues to win and retain the title and bring back what people want from Wardlow, is to smash dudes, the powerbomb symphony. Just do that, and you get him back going again. But this, what you do with Hobbs, take the belt off him like within 3 days, and then you put the Hobbs, and you didn't do much with him at all to really make him feel like an important. Just because he has a belt doesn't mean he's being featured strongly, right? He was just there as champion, did do nothing. Like, again, this, I feel bad, but to say this, because, you know, my history with Hobbs, but it's just his reign as TNT champion will just go down in history as being forgettable. You know, that's what it is.
All right, Jay White, his first match against Commander. I want to say the positives of this match, which is Jay White is so good that he had a credible pro wrestling match. I thought it was actually a pretty darn good pro wrestling match with a guy who can't really do anything, at least not yet. I mean, he did some low kicks outside of his high spots. But I was so impressed with Jay White. Now, I know what you're going to say is he needed to probably steamroll somebody in his first match. But to me, this was so impressive because he was put in a match with a guy with a completely different style. Commander is a one spot guy where he tried to do it like four times in this match.
That was the best thing about the match, is that Jay White actually made him earn it.
Right.
Built for it. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was so smart. And I know people think it was like a 50-50 match. It really wasn't a 50-50 match, because every time Commander did something, Jay White did it bigger and better, like when they were doing the chops and stuff. But man, I was just like, wow, this guy is a really brilliant professional wrestler to be able to have a really good pro wrestling match. I'm not talking about a lucha match. I'm talking about an actual pro wrestling US style match with a guy who can't really do much except for, you know, these one or two high spots. I was just so impressed with Jay White in this match.
Yeah, he did good. He did as best he could with, you know, this guy that doesn't know how to work. I mean, just right in the bat, they lock up and Commander does the arm out lock up. That's, oh my God, I couldn't believe that lock up. I was like, oh, like, right away you could tell a guy can't work by the lock up. And then here it was. And I'm like, oh my God, let's just pray this is going to be decent. You know, Jay White did I'm glad he at least built to that big old rope walk dive spot that Commander does. And, you know, but it should have been just a little bit shorter. There's some stuff I would have cut out. I know a lot of people were making a big deal about the was that little arm spot in the where he has Jay White's arm and he starts doing like this, you know, springboard and flip, and then he fucks that up. You know, if I was Jay White there, I would have
saved it. He tried to save it.
Jay White was being too kind there. I would have said, well, you fucked that up. Boom. No, well, you could do it. Yeah, you should have cut him off there. But, you know, he's giving the guy a break, I guess. But anyways, he's probably more doing it for Tony than Commander. And, yeah, it should have been just a little bit shorter and a little more decisive. I don't mind giving Commander something. I don't even mind giving that damn crossbody rope walk, whatever dive he does. I would not have given him the shooting star press or the 450 off the springboard 450 rope walk thing. I think that should have been he goes for it, crash and burns, and then Jay White hits the switchblade and wins. I thought they went a little bit too long with stuff. But the problem I had with this match was the fact that at ringside, Sean Spears.
I didn't even write this part down.
Fuck. Sean Spears is holding up signs. You know, he's like, you know, giving out like tens and nines and sixes, right?
Gave the five after Jay White won. He only gave him a five. That was the 10 to me. It was actually the end of the match. Is getting a good match.
And then then I started seeing Jay White jawjacking with Sean Spears. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Sean Spears, who's just on Rampage, lost Jungle Boy. And now you're programming Jay White, this big free agent signing with one of the lowest men on your totem pole who hasn't been featured on TV for a year and a half. I know he had some personal stuff that he went through, but you know, I mean, but as a character, I'm talking about not the person. He hasn't been featured. Not going to do anything for Jay White. Being Sean Spears does nothing for Jay White. And then him and Juice start fighting with Sean Spears. I'm like, why are we fighting with this guy? Why is Powerhouse Hobbs with QT Marshall? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, why are we doing this? Why are we associating potential stars with underneath people? Right?
Yeah.
And then here comes Ricky Starks. And I'm like, are we really going to get Ricky Starks and Sean Spears together versus Jay White and Juice Robinson of all people? Like, what are we doing here, Tony? Right? Like, at least reignite Powerhouse Hobbs and Starks, you know?
Yeah.
That was a winning combination that should have been huge and then you did nothing with. But maybe you can circle back and finally do something with. I was just like, ugh. Jay White, I think he's a tremendous worker. I really like him. To me, he should be featured he should be brought in as a huge star. You don't need to put him in the mix of like in a program right away. Just do the big video package for weeks, the vignettes. Here he comes, one of the greatest wrestlers of this last like 5 years, right? Former multiple time IWGP champion, etc. And now he's coming to AEW, and you just have him win matches on television. Just have him win. Everyone does not need to be in a program, you know? Maybe you build up Jungle Boy enough to where he's winning matches and getting momentum, and then finally he ends up across the ring on a pay-per-view versus Jay White, who's also been, you know, gaining momentum with wins on television. And Jay White beats him, you know? And then, because now he's beating someone, right? He's moving up the card, and now we're like, you know, whoever the champion is, that's MJF. But you know, Jay White would be a hell of a TNT champion, you know. So maybe that's going to happen. But I just think the booking of him has been just horrible. I don't think I can't believe we're getting Jay White versus.
Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe it's just a Rampage main event that they're setting up or something. But I can't imagine this is going to be a big time feud or a long feud.
You know what? What about that star that Chris Jericho made? That Action Andretti? Remember that big star now? Because he beat Chris Jericho?
Yeah.
Where's he at?
I mean, we called this... You specifically called this one on day one. So
dude, Ray Charles could have called this one.
All right, last thing we're going to talk about for our big picture segment before we get out of here. Adam Cole, Chris Jericho, face-to-face. Adam Cole was putting Jericho over, saying, you know, that's who he wanted to be when he was in high school. That's where he stole the catchphrase from, because when Jericho was a young wrestler and he was a cocky wrestler, he would cover someone with his foot, and then he'd throw a muscular pose and say, "Come on, baby." So that's where Adam Cole got the baby part. So Jericho was like, "Oh, thank you, but I don't like you." And so that was the start of this little back and forth. And finally, Cole was just like, "What are you going to do?" And Jericho pushes him, and they start fighting. Daniel Garcia comes out. It's 2-on-1. And who comes to save Adam Cole? None other than Britt Baker. She grabs Jericho, slaps him in the face. And, you know, the baby faces on this show were not very smart this week, because the heels were a step ahead of them along the way. Just like the Elite got outsmarted, here comes the Outcasts. Saraya, Toni Storm, Ruby Soho. It's 3-on-1.
They're under the ring for some reason.
Yeah, they just showed up, man. They just showed up, but it wasn't like on Raw where out of nowhere Jonah showed up. I was like, oh my gosh, how do you hide this? The camera work was so great for hiding Jonah.
I didn't see it. Well, he has visible powers. I don't know.
So Jericho and Garcia, they handcuff Adam Cole to the bottom rope. And Jericho grabs a kendo stick. So the way that they shoot it, you think, oh, he's going to just go to town on Adam Cole. And Adam Cole is telling him, like, come on, like, you coward. But Jericho, being the evil heel, slips the kendo stick to Saraya. And Britt Baker is on the ground. And the idea is that she hits Britt Baker so hard that Adam Cole is helpless to help his girlfriend. Now, unfortunately, she hit her with such weak kendo shots that Adam Cole was screaming bloody murder, and I was like, dude, like, she barely got hit with that one. I don't know why they should just use a chair, because you could do things with the chair that just we are programmed as wrestling fans that the chair is way more brutal than it really is when you hit them. Because right when she got hit with those kendo sticks, I was like, oh man, this was actually kind of good, and I was buying it, and Adam Cole screaming and Britt screaming. But Britt did one more thing that kind of took me out of it. She goes, "Austin," which is Adam Cole's real name. And I think it's a Tony.
We're all thinking, God, we missed Steve Austin.
Oh no! I think it was.
we missed the good old days when Steve Austin would come out and just beat people up.
I think it was a Tony Khan Easter egg that, if you watch All Access, Britt calls him Austin on All Access, because that is his real name. So,
well, there's just supposed to be such a heavy angle.
I would say I liked 70% of this. But I did. It was unfortunate that the kendo stick shots were so weak, because then I wasn't buying it from that point on.
It's unfortunate they executed this angle so poorly. That's, you know, you can do a heavy angle, but you had so much to work with, and they didn't even work with it. First of all, someone needs to teach Dan Garcia how to handcuff someone to the bottom, to a rope. Why he handcuffed why you had Adam Cole to the rope directly up to the rope instead of having a handcuff on the rope, and then he handcuffed Cole so he can kind of get some, he can move around a bit and try to grab, you know, stretch and try to reach out. You know, I'm guessing that's what he wanted to do, but he was kind of stuck on his knees on the bottom rope. I felt bad for him, you know. But and then this again, just like the Blackpool Combat Club Elite thing, this went way too long. No one helped, right? Okay, you could say, well, Jamie Hayter was taken out earlier, but again, they should establish that by the, you know, after the first hour of the show, and showed her getting medical attention, show her leaving the building because she's going to the hospital. Maybe she's going with her friends that have kind of been helping her out, or the, you know, Willow Nightingale and Sky Blue, you know, Tony's favorite wrestler. You know, they should have done something like that to establish that some people aren't going to be there to come back and help. And don't forget, early in the night during that tag team match with Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter versus Outkast, they established that Britt Baker's whole damn family's in that front row. You mean to tell me?
I didn't even think about that.
That her family just sat there and
supposedly
watched.
Adam Cole's family, or at least maybe his
mom.
Well,
yeah, I think a bunch of people, right, from both families were there watching. You mean to tell me that, okay, maybe the dad has a medical condition and he can't jump over the guardrail. You don't mean there's a crazy uncle that wants to get in there and try to get in there and get beat up? And like I said, no one's stopping them. You could have had referees out there. Instead of putting the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn versus the 2.0 and Hager in some random waste of time six-man tag team match, they could have been out there as well holding people back from trying to stop what they're doing, right? But they didn't, and it just looks stupid because there's no heat when there's no one trying to help, right? Like, that's what I'm thinking. Like, okay, where's now you start sending a wave of people. First you send the officials, then you send some management, then you send some wrestlers to be stopped.
Where was Shivani?
Where was Shivani? He's fucking laughing or he's doing, right?
You're right,
Taz. And then you get the family to jump in, you know, or try to jump in. Something to make it more like chaotic and, you know, no one's helping out. It just, they have some freaking security people that can bump. I know one's Gabriel Gallo, who's worked for Premier.
Is he in the security?
He works for AEW.
No way. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's out. Yeah, he's there every week. Like, he could have tried to get in. The security could have tried to get in. He takes a bump, right? Like, just make it chaotic. And here's JS. You got freaking Ty Conti, but what's her name? And Jay could be out there, you know, holding people back, you know, with a chair. Like, have them all with chairs, holding people back. They're not letting people in the ring. And then you have this beatdown of Britt. And then now it feels a little more emotional. Now it's like, oh my God, no one can get in there to help this girl. Oh my gosh. And they're beating him right in front of her fiance, you know, Austin, Adam Cole. Just like, my goodness. So I think it's, you know, I think people have forgotten what really good angles look like, because we're so, and it's, and I don't want to say this is an AEW problem. This is a modern wrestling problem.
Yeah,
this happens in WWE. There's things that happen and no one's doing anything, and it frustrates me as well over there as well. So I didn't think it was as good as people were like, oh my, this is so great. But I'm like, God, man, it's like these people have never watched good wrestling in a very long time. And sometimes things need to happen. You can't be out there for too long, because if you're out there too long, now the company is giving a heel, right? You know what I mean? Like, why isn't anyone starting to make the save? Like, you know, just like, for example, I've been watching a lot of Portland wrestling from the 70s when Buddy Rose takes part of Roddy Piper's bagpipe, takes one of those little things he blows in, the little horn, and jams it in his eye. Does he stick around and fucking laugh and hold it up? No, he bails. He bailed because he committed a crime. He got to get away. Right? Like, nowadays you have, like a few weeks ago, Brian Danielson stabs Hangman Page in the eye. He's sitting there holding it up. I had the murder weapon right here. Here I am. You know, no one's, you know, it's just, like I said, like, people really need to think more about this. And why is this person here? Why are we doing this? Well, what about our families at ringside? What are they going to do? Are we shooting them? Are they horrified? Like, who's holding them back? Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. I didn't even think about that. You're 100% right. 100% right. Bruce Hart would have jumped the rail.
Yeah. Fuck. Bruce Hart. Yeah. He needed more chaos there, and it just wasn't there.
All right. Next week, we will be in our normal time slot, Friday morning, and appreciate the patience so that we could get the show out there. By the way, if you want to hear a part two conversation with John and I, John is the guest of mine on the Fight Game Podcast Extra show that I do for the Fight Game Media Network. John and I are going to talk a little bit about the creation of the Fight Game Podcast, how it came to be, how we even knew each other, how we became friends. Yeah, little do people know, John slid into my DMs, man, on Facebook. That's how we met. We'll tell that story. Fight Game Media.
That's going to be a steamy conversation. Yeah. Yeah, we have to tune in. Next
Fight
week.
Game Media Network, the free feed. You'll hear John and I kind of not really continue this conversation, but we're gonna chat some more. So check that out. Also on that show, myself and Robert Silva previewing one of the biggest fights of the year. Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis. Robert is the boxing expert of Fight Game Media Network, so he and I chit-chat about that fight as well. All right. So, for John, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.